Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Thrilled today to have Ben Fisher here. He is a platinum product specialist for Google My Business and the founder of Steady Demand. It is great to have you here, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me, Seth.
You know, I love following you online and geeking out on all things local with you. I'm going to start with the hot button issue that's affecting myself and our clients, which is spam. Talk to us. What is going on? Google is the smartest player in the space. They know everything. They want to get rid of spam and organic. They got rid of it. They know what's there. It keeps coming. Why are we still having this battle?
All right. So why are we having this battle? Because spam is not the easiest thing for Google to tackle. That's really what it comes down to, right? And if you think about it, Google has always had the problem with spam. Even when it came to organic results, ever since day one, right? As soon as somebody learned that you could throw a link at something or you could stuff a keyword title or whatever it was, you know, or your keyword density, et cetera, you've always had spam. When it comes to Google My Business, now, GMB, you got to remember, is what? We're talking eight years, something like that.
And with a couple different iterations.
Exactly, right? You have Google Logo, Google Places, Google Plus, right?
And been Google. There, done that.
So the problem is that because of the way verification works with Google My Business, it's very easy for users to be able to, well, not users, for black hats in a sense, to be able to figure out how to create spammy fake listings. Now, those are the worst offenders. Those are the ones that are the lead gens. Those are the ones where people are trying to basically rank outside of their city. And the only way that they figure that they can do it is by creating a fake Google My Business listing, which clogs up the ecosystem and hurts customers. So consumers and merchants alike suffer. Well, so getting back to how can they and why can't they control this is because whenever Google puts something into place, they have to put it into place in such a way that's scalable. Now, if you look at the like what happened last year, June of last year, where the Wall Street Journal put out an article, and that was about the millions of fake lawyer Google My Business listings, right? CBC just recently did one a couple months ago about locksmiths. We just did one in the Door and Access magazine that had to deal with garage door spam, as you know. I think
one of those Wall Street Journal ones, they called me and said, "Nah, don't speak to me, speak to Ben."
So I can't say if I was in that article or not, but I wasn't follow up. So, so news and media does get their attention. But again, back to the problem, right? The problem is that their algorithm is heavily weighted towards keywords. Right? Keywords in the title of a business name. So businesses are, of course, going to go ahead and try and exploit this because they want to rank. The other problem is that, like with a service area-based business, they just don't have a really great way of ranking service area-based businesses based on their service areas. So again, what's another way that you can get around this is go ahead and people get fake listings or multiple listings. And sometimes they don't even know that they're outside of the guidelines. And they don't know that they're creating fake listings. But to circle back one more time to the problem. The problem is Google always looks to solve things at scale. So when that Wall Street Journal article came out, they put the Google My Business redressal form in place, right? They took it out of the community and the forums, which was a privacy issue all in itself. And then they gave it to the redressal form. One thing most people don't understand is that whenever you submit something through that redressal form, you're actually submitting it to a human being. There is a person who's actually reading through those reports, which is why they ask you to be detailed. So you got to imagine now there's an operator who is reading through hundreds of these spam reports every single day, right? But what ends up happening with that data, and this gets back to a little bit about why they can't combat it so easily, is that they end up feeding it into the machine learning, right? And then the machine learning now has to go out and train itself based on the inputted data. The problem is that when you have a bunch of people doing the redressal form and they're doing suggest and edit. And this is all getting fed into a machine, right? Bad data in, bad data out. And there becomes the problem. Most people don't know how to use suggest and edit in the first place. Most people don't know how to figure out if business is actually fake or spammy or how to classify it, right? All they know is the rankings are suffering and these guys are outranking me.
Well, and look, I'll say that there's two different categories, right? There's one specific one that pops in there, but, and if anything you do to raise volume on your end would be great, but there's ones that are sort of like, hey, there's one guy who got in versus entire sectors where it's a second tier term. So it might be dog bite, workers' comp, something that's not the money term. And sometimes you're seeing it with the money terms where it's so pervasive that if anybody looked at it, because I know I personally turn in forms, you do for a living. I mean, they're, you know, that they don't seem to be taking it seriously. And the answer may be they just don't care about the one-offs. They're figuring out at scale. It's not there. Someday it'll be there or not. But they're never, they are not going to look at this. They care enough about the industry to create the local service ads and go through the verification process there. But here, you know, you could have somebody who pops up with one or no reviews that's showing in a competitive search area. You're scratching your head. And it's like, you guys know better than that. You know how long something's been in business. Why are you giving, like, have a minimum of three reviews? And again, they do that, that people put three fake reviews. I get it. But at least have an obstacle or two to get you there in order to, you know, pretend that you're doing something for all the people that have legitimate businesses and are pushing forward.
Yeah. And this is the thing that people don't like to hear. And the fact is this. Since Google does look at things at scale, they look at things with large numbers. Is that spam, according to them, is less than 1% of all listings. Now, we in the SEO world and the marketing world, and as businesses go, whoa, that's got to be BS. That can't be true. 1%, what are you talking about? When you take a look at listings and the numbers of millions, you know, across the world, not just the United States, but across the world, then it starts to come and you start to have to look at it and say, okay, well, maybe they're right.
Well, they may be right, but the some of these monetizable local search areas are so important that they have added a second layer of ads to double dip on ad revenue. So these are sort of gold star areas. They know what's going on. They know it's different than everything else. And I, you know that within, and again, I understand, like I understand the kindness, but they need to be able to do it scalable. But if they chose to do something about it, it seems that it could be, is there, look, a cynical hat on, Google has bottom line revenue numbers to hit. When you put spam in there, it pushes people who are fighting for the limited organic space to then look towards other avenues. Is this one of those crazy things where, like, yeah, there might be some spam, but that means these guys with money are going to then spend more on AdWords?
Yeah, that's been a conspiracy theory for, I think, ever in Google search, right? Since probably right around 2001, I think, was when that conspiracy kind of popped up. And there may or there may not be some.
But in organic, you don't see that. You really don't. I know it's been around longer, but when they decided that they wanted to get rid of spam, can you manipulate? Absolutely. But has the really blatant, awful stuff disappeared? It had. They've made it so that for those people that are playing legitimate long-term games, you got to be pretty careful about how you behave in the organic ecosystem. That just doesn't seem to be, again, it may get there. Maybe it's not at scale, but there are multiple. I'm guessing if they gave you an hour, you could give them seven scalable ideas that would at least flag things under five reviews, exact match terms that are there. Again, not that you're going to knock them out, but you've got to at least put that through an extra piece of the algorithm.
But it doesn't work. So yeah, that's
you're pretty smart. I think that if we gave you time that you'd figure that out.
Well, no, what I mean is it doesn't work because we meaning the group of the product experts. But whenever I say that's what I usually mean, by the way. Anyway, but we talk to them all the time about these types of things. There's a lot going on behind the scenes that nobody's ever going to know about, actually. And, you know, we meet with their abuse teams. We met with them 2 weeks ago. directly with the people who are in charge of exactly what you're talking about. And we float quote things by them all the time. Like, this is stupid easy. How come you can't do this? How come, what's going on? You know, here's an idea. Use this for maybe crowdsourcing it. I mean, I can say this because it's my idea, but you know, there was recently something that was released on Android Central, I think it was, where people can now use the Street View app to go ahead and do Street View globes and take pictures of businesses, right? And they probably get local guide points for that. I was like, why don't you use that and incentivize people to go check out and see if these businesses are real or not and use that data? They said that. So think about it, you know?
That's a lot of effort. I mean, I guess to me, it's there, like when you do send in requests and you look, it's part of your game. You get this better than anybody. It does not appear that the level of scrutiny that the forms get is significant, that it's a numbers game. And that stuff that if you were just to get my 7-year-old to be asked the question, you know, that she would be able to say, oh yeah, that's not real. Yeah. But yet whoever's at the other end of the Google for human form answerer is, if there still is a human answering it, that it really is not getting. I mean, look, you've probably had clients with issues and you've put stuff in and you have juice and you still see stuff that doesn't.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Should. Like homes, for instance, homes right. are right now, private residences. Right. Where somebody will drop a pin on somebody's home. Right. And they don't actually have a business there. Or let's say you have a garage door company and they are licensed. However, they're showing their address on the home, which is a violation of the guidelines. Remember, guidelines, by the way, are always guidelines, not rules.
I think we saw but, it. We saw the virtual. On. Yeah.
Hold on, because I'm trying to answer a question pretty directly here, and that is this: is that I hear what you're saying. Oh, this is obvious. Oh, if it's under 3 reviews, we should take a look at it. You know, oh, if it's got keywords in its business name, we should look at it. This is where things get sticky and where if we enacted what you're talking about, or if Google enacted what you're talking about, then the number of suspensions would go through the roof. And here's why I'm saying this, is that if you look again, and I'm pointing back to the Wall Street Journal article, the Wall Street Journal article uncovered a huge amount of spam. So what did Google do? They turned up the dial. They said, okay, cool. Here's the match. Because you're right, we were feeding a lot of information to Google about these patterns for over a year. Anyway, but they did. And what ended up happening is we had hundreds upon thousands of real merchants get suspended. Those are called false positives.
Right.
And this is what happens when they do a tweak. So,
and although we like,
and I say this a lot when I do my speaking, Google always has to play a very delicate balancing act between consumers and merchants, but they also have to play a delicate balancing act between spam and real merchants.
Absolutely.
So if they were to say, okay, anybody with less than 3 reviews that has 3 or more keywords in their name, we are just going to suspend.
No, but that could get a higher level of scrutiny. And when you send a form in, maybe that would be a US-based person looking at it with you know, who is not going, you know, that is a red flag. There's got to be a way. Again, I get it. We lived through it. We saw people who got caught up in those suspensions. Most people that got caught up that I saw, there was some non-clean element. It may have been overbroad where there was a satellite office and a regular office and they took out both. I get it.
Sure.
So we did see that. But generally, and I guess why the frustration, and I know you are not Google, you are just a conduit to them, but that if you look at it within the subset of some of the, when you see where the spam is highest, where it's not 1%, under injury or criminal defense or something else, and they know that subset, and you're looking at the subset, and you're looking at the low reviews, and you're looking at exact match, mm-hmm. that you could be much more circumspect and get the false positives way down to the point of almost nothing if you got there? Because this is, look, there's a whole world of lawyers, not lead gen, that are doing some dubious stuff. Take that aside for a second. But put that aside. The stuff that's there, it's what appears to be either Russian bots or something that anybody looking at it would know. Now, I get statistically it may not matter, but within our ecosystem, and our ecosystem is enough, is what I would push back on, that you have an entire business division that's just been built around it. So that you would think, if you guys think it's valuable enough to create a whole new business line that isn't needed, like in the locksmith space, lawyers are barred. So you're now creating a verified listing that I don't know how much the Pinkerton background check supersedes being a member of the bar, but a little bit, but not
a bit.
You know, a little bit. But the idea that within that ecosystem, you wouldn't, because yes, I'm sure there's spam and there's a battle somewhere between used bookshops in Albuquerque. And I get it. And those, for those people, that means a lot. But within the legal space, we are dealing with, there are entire minefields where you can't even, again, it's not generally the money terms because those are too obvious, but the second tier terms where you see just spam for as far as you can see in certain search results, it's nonsensical. And the idea that there's not, again, this is my for when you get your brain trust moment, if there was some way they could say, hey, for these pull downs, for we know that these specific sectors are more ripe than others, it's not 1%, it may be a double digit percentage there on local. And it just seems sad, because as somebody who loves Google and has built a business around it and built an agency around it, it seems that they have generally incentivized positive behavior. And it's for the first time ever that I've seen, I'm sorry?
You mean negative behavior?
Well, they're incentivizing it without an end in sight.
So one thing I can tell you is that they do make tweaks on a regular basis. So, and they're micro tweaks, and be thankful for that, because otherwise we see what we saw after the Wall Street Journal, right?
Right. Cause we did, there were lawyers that like lost business for months. And I got to tell you, you know, I remember sitting at a convention and some lady was just yelling at me. I'm like, lady, it's not me. You know,
I think the backlog was over 6 weeks.
Right. Now, again, if you're going to do stuff like that, you have to have the support to back it up, especially if you're that imprecise. But they were also pretty, I would argue, that was not a carefully tailored one. That was one that, meaning that that was a pretty broad algorithm sweep. I saw what they were doing. It was obvious what they were trying to do. But you would think that if you combined the algorithm, you could combine factors. Again, they're smarter than me. That's why I'm like, I don't buy it. Well, let's talk about the reinstatement process, which is, you know, the dovetail side of this. So some people, so the good news is that, and that's also the frustration when somebody does get suspended, you're like, really? You're suspended and all these other jokers are not. It's an emotional toll that it takes. But what are some of the advice you give to our listeners? What are the steps and thoughts you do when there is a suspension to give yourself the best chance? And something that I've sort of preached for a while, and I'm sure that you, some of these best practices came from you and your camp, were what should you have on hand to be able to pull out of the file when that happens, so you don't need to scramble and find stuff and put it together? So what are the best practices of getting back? And then secondarily, if you could work on, what would you think prophylactically you'd want to have on file to be able to turn in, God forbid that happens?
Gotcha. All right, so first thing is, let's talk about steps, okay? My first step is relax. Literally, if you have to, go take a chill pill, okay? I'm not saying that you should take drugs, but I'm just saying.
Well, you are.
Whatever your chill pill
whatever,
is.
Whatever your happy place is, go to.
Yes, exactly. Go there. Get away from your computer, because if you don't, you're going to do something stupid, which stupid to me equates with creating a new listing, which...
Right. No, I wasn't even thinking. To me,
60% of the time.
I just look, I speak and I tell people on a bad review, forget about what we're talking about here, which is catastrophic, but a single bad review, I have the 24-hour rule. You're not allowed to do crap for 24 hours. You got to get the emotion out of you and realize you don't do something to lose your bar license. You don't want to anger that person. You know, you may decide to reach out to the person. You may decide to respond to it. You could flag it. You do whatever you want, but give yourself 24 hours to get the right
Yeah, exactly. Solution. So yeah. Step one, relax. Step two, read the guidelines. Everybody says they read the guidelines. Nobody reads the guidelines. They skim the guidelines. If you're going to read the guidelines, it's going to take you about 3 hours.
Is there an amalgamation or a place that you can go that's not the 3 hours that gives you what you need?
Not really.
There should. Maybe that would be a good thing for a blog post.
It might be. It might be. I can tell you this, man. I mean, I've done over 1,000 reinstatements this year. My company's done a lot more than that. And every reinstatement literally is a unique snowflake. There is a little bit that's different between every single reinstatement. And they seem kind of straightforward, but for the most part, they're not. And when we're talking about lawyers, it gets even much more convoluted and conflict. There's so many conflicts that can occur. We'll get to that in a second. But so number one, again, relax. Number two, don't submit for a reinstatement right away. Number three is read the guidelines. Okay. Number four, get some advice. I don't care. Ping me, ping you, ping somebody, ping your best friend, ping an enemy, ping somebody and get some advice. I'd be like, hey, you know, would you take a look at my listing? What do you think? Right. Do that. You know, you can, sometimes you can go to a local search forum to do that. I don't suggest going to the community to do that, because we're there more to fix problems than help with triage. I'll tell you about something else in a second. Anyway, once you've done that, then you can start the process for reinstatement. And if you're unsure, I'm going to be straight up about it. Hire somebody. Hire somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. Because there is something that's called there's a two-strike rule. It's an unsaid rule. It's just something that I've learned through experience, especially with lawyers. And that is that if you go through the reinstatement process a couple times and you fail a couple times, they will stop talking to you almost forever. Almost. There's ways around it. But as far as you're concerned,
you don't want to get to that point. So what you're saying, and look, in lots of life, you see that something happens. You're so certain of your answer that you're like, there's no way it could be. And I'm like, I'm no different. There's a level of certainty because you think you've done everything that's out there, and a fresh set of eyes, is always valuable for sure.
Yeah. And everybody, whenever I get on the phone with somebody who's been suspended, they say the exact same thing to me. It's like, literally, it's like, I think they're copying each other. No, I'm kidding, of course. But they say, I've been in business for over 20 years. I have a storefront location that was signage and everything. I've got 500 glowing five-star reviews. How can this happen to me? I hate to drone on, but that's kind of what it sounds like. I'm extremely empathetic and I'm sympathetic to these.
I thought you would use a different word. I thought you were very cynical.
No. I've picked up phone calls literally on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. Did one on Halloween, where somebody's calling me at like 10 o'clock my time, PM, and they're like, I just got suspended. I'm like, chill out, relax, don't worry about it. We're gonna help you out. It's a passion for me getting people reinstated because I know how much.
I know you've done. I've seen your work magic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. True. So basically, okay. So you've gone through those types of steps, right? At that point, now you can submit for reinstatement. Okay. We're about to get to items of proof, et cetera, what to have on hand. When you do submit for reinstatement, a couple different things might happen. If you're a lawyer, right? If you're a lawyer and you're working with a marketing company, they might have already gone ahead and submitted the reinstatement for you. If that happens, it's kind of a shame because you can only maintain one line of communication, which means now it's in the marketing company's hands to try
depending on who. Look, in my case, depending on who you have there, we do stuff in consultation with our client. mm-hmm. you know, very often if somebody knows, we're talking in language that is to the layperson not there. So I think part of it is who's on the other end of your, is it somebody playing in this space? If you're dealing with somebody who's never dealt with GMB, that's where you better pick up the phone and get an expert. There are people that are dealing with, like, people deal with this on a repeat player basis. And as you said, there are many different scenarios, some of which are much more basic and some of which are, you better bring the big guns.
Some of which are extremely complicated. And can take a long time to resolve sometimes because they get so messed up and convoluted. But the reason I bring this up is because this happens, man. It happens, Seth. Where it's like, I've worked with, you know, with a lawyer that works with very large lawyer marketing companies, not I'm going to say any names, of course, where they knee-jerked because it was a big client of theirs and they submitted the reinstatement before the client could even think about looking at it. And they screwed up the reinstatement. It happens.
Well, but that's also life, meaning it's, you know, it's a court that has no rules that you control. It's not like there's some laws passed by Congress or by a state that they need to follow. It's a private organization that holds all the cards. You better have your team. I mean, that's what we preach, as you know, in anything, whether it's in-house marketing person or out of house, if your in-house marketing director doesn't know from the founder what shady stuff has gone on, you may, just like in a criminal case, you better get your act together and not have one person out there as your advocate who doesn't know where not to go.
The messaging I guess I'd like to put out there is this, is that if you're an agency or if you're a practice or practitioner, is that you make sure that you communicate with each other. If you're an agency, you prep your clients, because in the lawyer space, it's only a matter of time until you get suspended. It's not if, it's when. So just make sure that that communication is in place. When you initially start your engagement, say, look, if and when you do get suspended, don't worry about it. We're going to talk before we do anything. You, please don't do anything. We will work it out together. And that's what I don't see happening, by the way. So that's why I make that recommendation.
No, it's a very fair point. And look, there's the extra pressure, which is, you know, the waiting sounds great and it needs to be done, but there are revenue issues hitting you day to day potentially. Sure. And yeah. So but like at the end of the day, I just went through something bizarre where something fell out of Google. It was, you know, and that, you know, the first reaction is to be patient, right? And yep. Wait for stuff to come back. Well, it turned out something wasn't right. It took a second round. And so as a business owner, there's this pull and tug, I'm giving, you know, from where I sit, mm-hmm. where the advice you give is brilliant. It needs to be followed. But there's also the business owner wouldn't have gotten where they got in life if they didn't push. So if you have this cross section between when are you pushing because it's not going according to even Google plan versus, hey, take the deep breath, give your 24 hours, get to the happy place, and then come up with your strategy. And so 24 hours, yes, I think the frustration you get a lot of times is this, you know, you keep hearing a 14-day, you know, catchment period thrown back to you by Google. And that's one of those, particularly, you know, we saw it during the LSA rollout. I mean, 14 days is a long freaking time. That, do you have any choice? No, but those are the, you know, that's where I wish I had a box of happy pills I could send to people to help them get through that period. Because, you know, short of being a nine figure or more advertiser, you're probably not going to get direct access to people. And then you are going to end up having some period of time to wait.
Did you know that on my blog, I keep an update of the do's and don'ts for a reinstatement, as well as what the current reinstatement time period is? Okay. All right. Because right now it's 2 to 4 days, by the way, just so you know.
No, no, right. But much, much better than it. No. Today, but when everybody was panicking a few months back, it was 6 weeks.
Well, that was maybe that was last year.
Right.
A few months
back. Sorry, I don't count COVID. I apologize. I'm being facetious, but I just say, like, time seemed to have stopped during COVID. So, yes.
No.
Before COVID.
You did not stop there. No.
No. I'm talking about, for me, my own Michigas. Like, I don't
care. Okay. I got you. I was going to say, man, no, during COVID, we were put into a war room almost immediately. The first week COVID hit, so we made every Friday with Google. And so one of the first things that came out of my mouth was reinstatements need to be a priority. Merchants are hurting more than enough right now. I said, you got this whole permanently temporarily closed thing going on, which is really messing with businesses. And I said, you need to make reinstatements priority number one. And then luckily they did. And one day turnarounds is what we saw during in all of COVID, actually. So I give Google kudos for that. Before I get into the what should you prep yourself with, right? I got to say that we do have a service that we offer, and which actually builds up what we call a case file. So, you know, we've been kind of called the lawyers for GMB, quote unquote, right? So what we do is we treat it like a case, and we actually build up an entire file of what
you
are
do this
all
before like. Any issues happen. This is what do as a to bulletproof your place.
Exactly. And that's what it is. It's basically making sure that every location that you have is 100% in compliance, is ready to be reinstated in the first place. Then we do basically a full backup of GMB, of every single thing in GMB, just in case, because we want all the reviews, all the posts, everything. Because you will have sometimes, it's half a percentage of time you get a catastrophic error. So, which means you lose everything. And so if we have the backup proof, we can at least try and get it back, which we do about 80% of the time. And then basically, so if somebody's enrolled in that program, we also reinstate them for free. So that's kind of a bonus too.
It's like it's an insurance policy.
Exactly. Basically. So, but to get onto some critical items, right, is that every business should have on hand, at the very minimum, if they are a storefront pictures. Okay. If they've got logos and signage inside, they should have pictures of that. If they're inside of a building that has a directory, they should have a picture of that directory. If it's a virtual satellite office, make sure you have an executive office. Make sure you have a body in that office.
An office with a sign and a diploma that's yours as opposed to just a Regis waiting room.
Well, and sign on the actual door. Right.
Of the interior office.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And don't share an office with 100 other people. You know, it's not really.
You look again. We'll pivot to this after you finish it. But these are the business imperatives that I get. I'm sort of the middleman in this. Right.
Of course.
People are coming to me and saying, hey, my business needs have changed. So finish this off. And then I want to ask you about that.
Sure. So, you know, but make sure that you have a barn address for your locations. You know, so assign somebody to that location, have them at that location, if you can, you know, and, you know, make sure that basically you want to, it's kind of like citations. Think of it that in that sense, you want to have all of your legal docs in a row with the proper information. I'll give you one example and then we'll move on because I know we're time wise, but I saw somebody who had a Secretary of State entry and their zip code was off by one digit. This was enough to block a reinstatement, by the way. Okay. In other cases, and this is probably more common, is I'll see somebody who has a physical location but they moved 3 years prior, never updated the bar.
Right. You know, I've seen that for myself. Not the move, but a digit off in the phone number, whatever it is. There's always something.
Never updated Secretary of State. You know, never updated BBB or whatever the case may be. City licenses, things like that. The problem here is that when you have these issues, is that you've now taken what could have been a 24-hour turnaround, and now it's 3 to 4 weeks.
Gotcha.
And I see it happen too many times. I was not a lawyer today I was talking to, but an air conditioning company. Been in business 30 years, blah, 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 blah. Signage? Junk. Totally missing actually what the actual name of the LLC was. So what do they have to do? They have to go out and get their all get it. Go get the signage. you know? And then we also found out that they had a Secretary of State entry, which was inactive. They didn't pay their bill.
Happens.
It happens. This is regular business, you know? So, I mean, stuff happens. So
I'm going to have limited time. I just want to go through some rapid fire questions in our remaining minutes. That's okay. Okay. First, a lot of people right now are rethinking their office space needs. That's the irony of all of this, right? Before you'd be like, how could you not have an office? Now everybody's virtual. So when somebody does, let's say they want a space within a virtual space, people come to me and say the right place for me is a space within a shared office space. Not ideal. Tell them not to do it, but they're going to do it. Is the picture on the wall, would a Google 360 tour, like what are the things you could do if you are a legitimate office within something that is questionable? Is it just too much of a risk, or is there a way to sort of at least give yourself a fighting chance?
You could do a video. Do a video.
And just show the walk to it that there's something there. Yeah. Again, assuming you have a rational player watching it. The filtering of like type of businesses within a geographic building. Is that something that we're going to see continue, or is that something that you think they're going to eventually eliminate? There's a building across from the immigration office that every immigration lawyer wants to be in, but in theory right now, only one's being shown. Crazy, not great user experience. I'm sure they have their reasons. What's your take as to this stays?
That's going to be there for probably a long time.
Is there anything that you can see jerrying the pin to a different part of the floor? Is there anything you can do to get yourself free if you're not the A player in a multi-story building that has other people like yourself?
Moving your pin is a horrible idea and will lead to a suspension. So
what do you recommend?
Number one, what do I recommend? Don't be near other people that have your same primary category.
But you're like we live in this one world. Other people, you know, if your clients can come in, see you, and go across the street and file their, you know, there are times when it is the right business answer. Again, it's not if it doesn't include this. So I live digital first. We have a policy that any client of ours or potential client who's about to make a move has to come to us. We bulletproof it because it is one of those crazy enigmas that like the right place to be for business may kill your online visibility.
Yeah. So unfortunately, no, I get what you're saying. The other thing you could try and do is you could try and make your primary category a little bit different than what everybody else is doing and put your other money categories into your subcategories. That will work actually.
But you're competing against an A player with, you know, I mean, if you're trying to, again, it's if you're trying to win, that's a harder way to go, but it's better than nothing, I guess. I've seen people do this where they fought for an impossible market. They'll go for, you know, bicycle accidents and give up on auto accidents and do something like that where they get a niche within it. What do you see coming? What should people be prepared for? What is fun for 2021 that we should be waiting for?
For 2021, I mean, what you can expect is you can probably expect more to happen with the Google guarantee and the Google screen. I think that's kind of a no-brainer.
You think the check from Google guarantee, Google screen will ever appear in the three-pack?
We're already starting to see it spottily.
Really?
Very, very. It's small. It's an extremely limited test at this point.
So it's a test. We don't know if it'll go or not, but that's possible. Yeah.
It's same always with Google, right? It's a test. What I would say is if you want to keep an eye out for it, is keep an eye on mobile Android, actually, the most, because that's where all Google experiments start. So, but we've seen it in the local finder. We've seen the Google screen badge and the Google screen badge, actually. And I believe it's also been spotted in the wild on the three-pack. So I personally have not seen it myself.
No, and I would. It makes sense if you're going to go through all of that, and you know, to not have it, to go through that and not have the benefit of it, because to me that's again another spam fighting technique.
You would think. No, I've been learning a ton more about LSA over the past couple of months.
Oh, let me ask you this:
so much spam in LSA, it's not funny.
There is.
Oh, yeah. Go look at L.A. and type in personal injury.
Well, everything's always different in L.A.
True.
So it's a final thing along those lines. So look, it's one thing to get through your background check. What about individuals who come to us that are sort of solo practitioners, where right now the background check is needing a incorporated business, you need an EIN number for that person. What is, do you think that's, have you seen any issues with, not any of you seen any issues, but have you seen any people dealing with that, with the, with getting an LSA when they're still a sole practitioner?
I don't know anything. I haven't dealt with that yet.
Okay.
So unfortunately I don't have an answer for you on that.
There's so much. Every time you think that you have a handle on it, there's more to learn and more nuances. And I know that you has spent a lot of time working, trying to make things better. And I'm sure that because of NDAs, can't talk about all of the efforts you've put in, but thank you for those of us that have reaped the benefits of some of the common sense wisdom that you've imparted upon Google. I know you have a long way to go, but it is certainly better than it was.
It gets better every single year. I will say this is that, you know, surface area businesses next year, I think we're going to probably see a lot of major changes for good and for bad. So I can't really get into much more detail than that.
I didn't want to hear the proprietary part, but I didn't quite understand what you're saying was coming.
I have a feeling that for service area based businesses, which lawyers have a lot of SAB listings, right? That there's going to be some interesting changes in 2021.
But that's one of those areas that's still less regulated. You know, I guess the garage door guys are always the guys who start that world.
Correct.
Because they're like, why do we need an office? And lawyers are trying to find any way to not just deal with their one pin. And those two will come to a head.
That's, in a sense, correct. Yes.
And what's interesting is the lawyers are closer to garage door repair people now than ever, given that the majority of clients are not touching a law firm office from beginning to end. So just like, you know, my gut is, had the decision to make to tweak the algorithm for virtual offices happened today, it might not have been as extreme, because right now, can you really blame somebody for downsizing to a mailing address, not for multiple ones? And that's also a question as to whether or not, I'll conclude with this, because this is a question, sure, I get a lot. If you have one location, and that one location, you're not spamming to multiple places, you're one business owner, and you want your one location to be a virtual, that's your business model. Do you think that having the first location versus your second, third, or fourth location makes any difference as far as how Google will see this, if you're saying that it's if it's clearly a virtual location from Google's point of view?
Virtual as in virtual office?
A virtual office as your main office. You're not pretending to have offices everywhere.
Like a Regis.
Let's use Regis as the brand. So you're saying, hey, I have one location. I have no need for an office. I'm not going to put an office somewhere because Google thinks it's good, but I do need to show up on Google. I have historically, you know, and a lot of it has to do with competition. The risk in a tier B or C market is a lot less because unless an algorithm picks it up, nobody's turning you in versus what I've always told people is, if you're playing the SEO game, you better have something.
I'm just going to answer your question. The answer is no. So the guidelines very much state very clearly that even if you only have one office and it's at a virtual office, it is okay if it is staffed by your staff and is an executive office.
That's not, so not a virtual office, but a fractional office is okay.
It has to be an office where there is staff.
Your staff.
During your stated business hours.
But when you say staff, does the shared receptionist... No. Does not count. It has to be your employee.
Yep. Your employee.
The next thing you're going to see is people running out and giving a contract to the virtual, to the staff member at the Regis.
That wouldn't work either.
You never want to litigate. But when you say, here is my employment agreement for the lady sitting there 9 to 5.
and she'd be employed by 100 people.
Exactly. But that's where it gets to the next issue I think Google is going to run into is that the new normal is not, we don't look at things the same way. I mean, look, I have a lot of office space for my law firm. Our digital agency, there's a consideration, you know, we're in the cloud now. you know, I plan to have an office when we come out of this, but it's one of those things that right now, if legally you can't go to the office.
Yeah.
Right. You may be paying rent, but it is a virtual office. There's nobody there for the foreseeable future. So
yeah, the only thing I can say is I can wrap it up with this is that if for that point, at least is that Google does think long-term. Right. I'm not saying they're perfect. I'm not saying they're awesome. I'm not saying they're great, but they think long-term.
Right.
And obviously, if you look at COVID and you look at that long-term, it's going to go, not going to go away.
It's going that direction.
But it's going to get better, right? So they acted quick. COVID hit. They took measures. They put them in place. Temporary closed. Permanently closed. Oh, no, not permanently closed. Anyway, mask required. Yeah, 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 right? Those things are very difficult to add to the dashboard. But they did them. And obviously they put together the online booking, online appointments, online scheduling, online meeting, right? That is geared towards, obviously, people like your clients. They can do online scheduling and online meetings. So that's the stopgap for right now. But the rules all still stay the same, is that if you want a storefront, you have to have an office.
Right. And so there is an office. It's just everybody's by law staying at home until a mayor or governor allows you to go back. So
but you have an office.
You got an office.
So, you know.
And then at the end of the day, that's your question. Do you have an office? If you have an office, you're going to be good.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well,
Ben, this has been awesome. Thank you so much. I learned a lot. I'm sure our audience did. And can't wait to continue this conversation in the future.
Sounds good, Seth. Anytime you want, man.
Thanks. So good.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks so much.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.